in 2024, if you're a black conservative with thoughts like mine, you're a pariah in many black circles. You like in the, within the black church, within a lot of these social settings, groups, you're a pariah. You're certainly an outcast. You're certainly not welcome the way that you used to be.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. On today's episode, we have got on the host of Fearless. He is a sociocultural and political commentator, and this is Jason Whitlock.
Zuby, thanks for having me. I don't know if you know this, but my very first podcast, I think in 2010, it was called Real Talk. I'm comfortable.
Good. Well, thank you in advance for the gift of your time, and thank you for allowing me to use this awesome studio.
Awesome. Good to have you. Want to treat you well.
Awesome. Jason, a lot of my listeners will already know who you are, but for those who aren't familiar, can you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'll walk your audience through a little bit of my history. I made my name as a sports writer, for 30 years or 25 years. Started out at the Bloomington Herald Times as an entry-level sports writer. Went to Charlotte, North Carolina briefly. Made the first part of my name in Ann Arbor, Michigan, years ago in the early 1990s, covering the Fab Five basketball team. Chris Webber, Jalen Rose, Juwan Howard, these guys at Michigan. And then spent 2 years doing that, and then really made my name for myself for 16 years in Kansas City as a sports columnist in Kansas City. And then eventually working for ESPN and Fox Sports, two different times at both places. And I've always used my sports column as a way of talking about the greater culture at large. And so when I transitioned into being more of a culture critic, it was kind of natural because I was already doing that as a sports columnist. And, you know, eventually, maybe let's say 5, 6, 7 years ago, I connected with Tucker Carlson, and people would see me regularly on Tucker Carlson's Fox News show. And then I've been connected to The Blaze and doing Fearless with Jason Whitlock since 2021. And I still do a blend. I talk a lot about sports, but I talk about American culture at large and, you know, spend a lot of time. People know me as someone that has a unique perspective on America's race issue, if you will. And so that's where my notoriety came from, sports, and then I've transitioned into a bit more of a cultural critic.
Awesome. I'm curious to go backwards a little bit, because I just realized I don't know that much about your early life, childhood, growing up, so... Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I grew up in Indianapolis, Indiana. My parents married James and Joyce Whitlock, have an older brother, James Jr. My parents divorced when I was about 5 years old. My dad remarried and ended up getting a stepmom and a stepbrother and a stepsister out of that I'm still very close to. My dad has passed, my stepmom has passed, still very, very close to my stepsister and stepbrother. And, my brother's my best friend in life or best person in my life. But I was an athlete growing up, a football player, good enough to get a mid-major football scholarship to Ball State University. If not for my football playing, I don't think I would have ever stepped foot on a college football on a college campus. Grew up pretty poor, particularly with my parents divorcing. My mother was a factory worker. My dad turned into a, for lack of a better description, a ghetto entrepreneur. He owned three different bars at different times, not all at the same time. In the ghettos in Indianapolis, that, you know, he was so think of like the TV show Cheers, but it's just a bunch of black working class people. That was kind of my upbringing, and I kind of grew up on a bar stool, following around my dad and his friends at a place called the Masterpiece Lounge. I talk about it all the time on 38th Street in Indianapolis. But, kind of rode the financial roller coaster as a kid. In 1984, me and my dad had run into tax trouble. We lived in a 400 square foot, one bedroom apartment in the hood in Indianapolis. I slept on the couch most nights. And that was my senior year of high school. And again, I was a very good football player. Our quarterback was a guy named Jeff George, who was the number one recruit in the country and eventually was the number one pick in the either 1989 or 1990 NFL draft. So we won a state championship. And anyway, sent me to Ball State University, played football there. And fell into my freshman year. I signed up. I didn't know a lot about college. No one in my family, immediate family, had gone off to college before. And so I chose a major initially as to be an accountant, just because my dad said his accountant at his bar, you know, did okay. And I said, oh, I'll be an accountant. I got in a math class at Ball State, and I was like, nah, I won't be an accountant. And a friend of mine said, hey, man, you read the newspaper every day in the sports section. You should be a sports writer. And I switched my major after the first semester at Ball State to journalism. And I wanted to be the sports writing version of a guy named Mike Royko, who was a newspaper columnist in Chicago, Pulitzer Prize winning, syndicated all over the country, syndicated all over the world. And I wanted to be the Mike Royko of sports. So in 1985, I switched my major to journalism, graduated college in 1990, I played football and I drank a lot of beer and smoked a little weed when I was in college. So I wasn't really, really super prepared to be a journalist when I graduated. And so I had to take a part-time job coming out of college for the Bloomington Herald Times, paid me $5 an hour. For 20, 25 hours a week. I started out at rock bottom. And as soon as I graduated, though, I really matured and started taking the world more seriously and started taking my career more seriously and just poured myself into trying to make myself into a journalist. And here I am, 34 years later.
Today's episode is brought to you by BitBox. As I'm sure you've noticed by now, inflation is a major issue. The more money that central banks print, the less your dollars, pounds, and euros are worth. When it comes to government-issued fiat currency, inflation is inevitable. That's why for many years I've been saving in Bitcoin. It's scarcer than gold, and it cannot be inflated by any central bank. But if you're going to buy and hold Bitcoin, it's vital that you store it securely, because leaving your coins on exchanges is risky and leaves them vulnerable to potential hacks. That's where today's sponsor, BitBox, comes in. BitBox is a Swiss-made hardware wallet that allows you to store your Bitcoin easily and safely. It only takes a few minutes to set up a wallet and take full custody of your coins the same way I do. Secure your Bitcoin today with a BitBox. Go to bitbox.swiss/Zuby to get 5% off a hardware wallet today. That's bitbox.swiss/Zuby for 5% off.
How have you seen or felt the USA change over the course of these decades?
It's changed a lot. And it's you know, I remember my childhood being very optimistic and hopeful about where the country was going and what opportunities were available for me as a young person. You know, I remember my parents and grandparents and everybody talking about, like, hey, the world's changing and you're going to have opportunities that we didn't have, and, you know, let's make sure you take advantage of them. And a lot of that was related to race. You know, my junior high and high school went through busing, forced integration.
Okay.
And I live, when my parents divorced, I initially lived with my mother from, probably second grade all the way through my junior year of high school. That's probably in first grade all the way through my junior year of high school. And then my senior year of high school, I lived with my dad. But my mother, at some point, we got robbed living in the ghetto. Someone broke into our little small apartment, and my mother ended up taking a second job and moving us out to a working class suburb where, you know, it was predominantly white and working class, other factory workers or whatever, families. And so I went to junior high, Stony Brook Junior High, and Warren Central High School, to where they bust inner city black kids into my school. And I was, I think it started when I was in eighth grade, and I can remember being quoted in the Indianapolis Star, the major newspaper in Indianapolis, talking about what my level of optimism was for busing. And I was probably quoted in the paper talking about, hey, these kids are going to get treated the same way as me, and this will be great. And so I was kind of the leader in the connection between the black kids that got bused into our school and the white kids that were already there. I was the person that ran with both groups and had friends with both groups and was kind of seen as the leader. In my class, Jeff George is a year behind me. I was the best football player in my class and the, you know, most popular kid at my school. And so starting in eighth grade, I felt this leadership and this connection of, hey, let's get these two groups, the bust-in kids and the pre-existing kids, to get along. And that's – so I was captain of my high school football team that won the state championship and was nationally ranked. I think we finished number 9 in the country. It's a very successful, uplifting experience. Not everything that went on at my high school was perfect, but we accomplished great things together and just kind of had a vision that we were going to be difference makers and we were different than previous generations. And so I just remember everything being optimistic and like, man, I'm getting to go to college and I'm going to have a professional career. And I saw my sister, my stepsister's older than me. I saw her doing great things and big things that kind of blew my mind to see a black woman accomplish and have this professional success. She had graduated, I think, from Indiana University. It's called IUPUI. It's a campus of Indiana University right there in Indianapolis. And she started working for a pharmaceutical company and all that. And then my brother joined the Air Force. He's 3 years older than me. He joined the Air Force and was accomplishing great things. And we had just friends of all different kind of racial differences and backgrounds. And, you know, we thought we were on this path towards harmony, mm-hmm. racial harmony. And to see us now where we are with all this racial division, all this promotion of segregation, all of this, the level of sensitivity, don't call me this, and all this, if someone says or does the wrong thing or doesn't like the right music, they're racist. I never dreamed that this is where we would be in 2024. And it just seems like we've gone the opposite direction. Racial relations have gotten much worse in my lifetime, where I thought we were on a path to things getting much better.
That's such an interesting statement you've just said at the end there. So you think race relations in the USA are worse now than they were?
Much worse.
However many decades ago?
Yeah, I think... I think we fear each other, and I think that there's a game being played on black and white people that we're not looking for shared values. We're not even pursuing shared values. We're not pursuing clearly what Dr. King was talking about, judging people by the content of their character. We're now... have been locked in, or many people have been locked into, we judge everything based on black and white.
Today's podcast is sponsored by my book, Strong Advice, Zuby's Guide to Fitness for Everybody. When it comes to health, exercise, and nutrition, there are a huge number of resources available. Some are great, but others, not so much. The problem with a lot of fitness advice is it's unnecessarily complicated. This can leave you feeling even more confused, with underwhelming and unsustainable results. Most diets fail, and even when they do work, most people simply regain the weight. Strong advice is different because the sole goal of the book is to help you and not to confuse you. It's simple enough for beginners, but detailed enough for experienced lifters. No nonsense, just valuable information. Strong advice has already helped thousands of people to achieve and maintain their fitness goals, and whether your goal is to lose fat, build muscle, or just get in better shape, it can help you too. Visit ZubiFitness.com to get $10 off the ebook or audiobook version of Strong Advice. That's ZubiFitness.com, and as a loyal podcast listener, you'll automatically get $10 off. Enjoy the rest of the podcast.
It's interesting because I totally acknowledge what you're saying.
Yeah.
At the same time, I feel like it's really a pretty small percentage of the population that thinks that way.
I think
it seems quite pervasive online and in certain circles. And there's absolutely a question. There's no doubt that there is an agenda, and there are people out there trying to create those divisions into. Yeah, I call it the racism industrial complex. Mm-hmm. Right? There's no question that there's a massive grift going on in that regard. However, when I'm I don't live in the U.S., but I think this is my sixth time here this year. I've been to 25 states, dozens of different cities, met thousands of Americans. And it seems like a really small percent who really buy into those ideas. What I generally see is that most people do get on fine and judge people by the content of the character rather than the color of their skin, to the chagrin of the race hustlers and the people in the media and certain politicians who would like people not to do that.
Have you tested your theory in terms of you're running in a unique circle? So am I, in terms mm-hmm. of the conservative circle that's influenced by Christian beliefs. I'm not saying everybody's a Christian, but in the conservative circles, the culture is a bit more Christian. And so you're looking at people that are authentically trying to judge each other by the content of their character, because that's what they've been programmed to do by their faith. There's another world, particularly for black people, in the black church, where racial idolatry rules, mm-hmm. where a racial worldview is preached in the black church in general. And there's a lot of discussion in the black church about race loyalty, and it's all dependent upon your political worldview. You're not black unless you're a Democrat and unless you support liberal ideas. And so what I say is, like, in the 1980s, early 1990s, I had all the same values, thought pretty much all the same things that I do now. No one cared, really, in the black community. It's like, if I wanted to go to a black nightclub, if I wanted to go to Essence Festival or whatever black event is going on, no one cared what my political worldview was. More than welcome. Now, in 2024, if you're a black conservative with thoughts like mine, you're a pariah in many black circles. You black within the black church, within a lot of these social settings, groups, you're a pariah. You're certainly an outcast. You're certainly not welcome the way that you used to be. And so I would, as a visitor to America, and perhaps not as immersed in stereotypical or the predominant black culture here in America that's so tied to politics, You may be running a circle where you just don't see it.
I do see it. I see it very much. I mean, if someone were to ask me, like, of any racism that I have experienced, if I were to give the total honest answer in terms of, say, being called racial slurs or anything like that, it's predominantly come from black Americans.
Yes.
And I say this as a black British person,
yeah,
of Nigerian origin. It's not it's very rare for it to be from white Americans or any other demographic, right? It's but my point is that it's such a minority of people, and I've only ever experienced it online, right? I've spent plenty of time in lots of different cities. You know, I've spent time in Atlanta, gone to hip hop festivals there. I spent time in LA. I spent time in San Francisco. I don't even like those cities so much, but I just travel all around. When I actually just talk to people in real life, I've absolutely come across this mentality, particularly online where people just, you know, say wild stuff and anyone can access you. But it's like, in my experience, if I were to look at the total population of people I interact with, it's sort of like 99-1, 98-2. So it's there, and I see it, and I've even seen it hundreds and hundreds of times, if not thousands of times, but it's a small chunk. It's a very small chunk of the population. Just like I feel the same about, you know, what people could call the woke mind virus, right? The people who really, really buy into that ideology. It's like, it's there, for sure. There are people who are pushing and promoting super bonkers ideas. There's infinite genders. You can just identify as whatever you want. You should be trying to trans the kids or whatever. But then again, when I'm in the real world and I talk to people, be they apolitical, conservative, libertarian, liberal, even remotely progressive, I find very few people who really believe in and support those ideas. So it's there, but it's a fringe.
I think it's virtually everything they're doing is fake.
Okay.
But I think a lot of them are faking it. Mm. And so, again, it may come down to, like, my social circle,
yeah,
80s, 90s, early 2000s, is, let's say, for lack of a better description, 70% black.
Okay.
And within that circle, obviously I got friends of mine that are like brothers to me and people that I've known my whole life, that's unshakable. Mm. But within that 70%, there's now more of an open hostility towards people who have faults like mine, more conservative, more biblical, and there's, again, it's like, I'll unpack it. I used to be able to be in demand and speak at virtually any college in America. Mm. And now virtually no college in America would have me speak. And I've spoken at Harvard before. You know, that had to be 15, 20 years ago. But, you know, they'd rather die. There's a flag behind me that says Ball State University. Yeah. That's my school. Yeah. That's my very supportive of. Very supportive financially and enthusiastic. Ball State is distance itself from me. And then, you know, like I belong to the National Association of Black Journalists. Very hostile towards me. The last time I tried to go, and this was probably in 2013 or whatever, a lot of hostility for me. I mean, a lot of hostility. And they'll have their reasons, justifications. Well, you criticize this person or that person and blah, blah, blah. But I'm just, there are places where people with my worldview,
which, for sure,
I think is biblical, you know, people can disagree, but it's because I don't think of my worldview as political, but it's biblical, and it seems to be consistent with the conservative, but it's just I'm not welcome. And, you know, I've made peace with that and have adjusted my social circles to run with people that share my values, and I believe that's probably in the same spaces where you're at, people that share your values, and so you might be slightly unaware of the level of hostility, American black men in particular, because particularly if you only date black women, which isn't me, so I'm not talking about myself, but if you only date black women, it's a much tougher road to go if you're a conservative.
Oh, I know all this. I know all this. Like, so this is again, this is not new to me.
This is real.
My only point was the percentage of the population.
I get that. We're only 13% of the population.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm aware of,
And so if you're social, if we're only 13% of the population, but 70% of your socializing was with that 13%, and now it's like, holy cow, I'm out here on an island.
I think it's largely just because of, you know, political and media psyops, though. Because particularly in the last eight to nine years, there's been very aggressive political polarization in this country and also in other Western countries. And there's been this framing, I think, particularly because more liberal people on the left, like, they have this extreme obsession with Donald Trump in particular. So if you are, whether you're a black person or a Latino or a white person, whoever, if you support Trump or you voted for him, I've had this conversation with, you know, everyone in California, everyone in New York, right? Like, people who are conservative leaning, period, you're not that ideology and belief system, particularly if you support and voted for Trump and you're open about that, that is not welcome. And then you will get a double dose of it if you are black, because then you're also seen as some type of race traitor and you are supposed to. I get what you, I know, I've had people tell me that I'm not black because of my politics,
right?
Which is one of the most goofy ideas in the world. I've been called a white supremacist. I'm aware of all this stuff. And I find it quite laughable, because it just shows how far gone some people are, honestly. By the time you're going around calling black people white supremacists, you should probably rethink your world. You should probably rethink your worldview.
Let me add this wrinkle too for someone like me. You can go back to the 2000s, 2010s, early parts of. There wasn't a television network that I wasn't welcome on and didn't appear on, from MSNBC to CNN to Fox News, and now in corporate media, the only place that I'm welcome is Fox News.
Yes.
And nothing about me has changed.
Yeah, same with me.
And so that's where I'm just like, they're not. I'm still a top flight sports writer. I'm still, a cultural critic who matters because people react to what I say. But I'm not welcome a lot of places. And that to me is like, hold on. If it's merit, this certainly isn't based on merit, what's happening to me. Mm-hmm. It's not based. My character has actually elevated. Mm-hmm. I was a much more sinful person when I was welcome everywhere than a person who fully embraces Christian identity and trying to live it out.
That in itself is a problem, because as are not just the USA, but the entire Western world is becoming increasingly hostile towards true Christian biblical values. Everything is shifting left. Everything is shifting secular. So that's why you have so many Christians, sadly, including pastors and even churches, who are diluting and even shifting biblical teachings to become much more liberalized. And you have this whole progressive Christianity. You have, Lord knows how many churches in this country have a pride flag and or a BLM flag up in them. I mean, by the time you're putting a pride flag up in a church, you're lost. You're completely gone.
Woman's right to choose is being preached.
Absolutely.
From the pulpit.
Yeah, exactly. You have pastors calling themselves, I'm a pro-choice pastor, blah, blah, blah. It's all goofy. And I think it undermines Christianity more than any atheist could dream of, any anti-theist could dream of. I just think this is the way, not just this country, I'm from the UK, and the same thing is happening there. And the US, by the way, has a much stronger Christian population than the UK does, even though we have the Church of England. I think only about 6% of the British population goes to church regularly. So it's a lot further gone there, and Islam is making, you know, much more headway in the UK and other parts of Europe than it is, say, in the US. So it's all trending in that way. And I just think that it's a combination of these things, right? So you've got, I mean, you've got the you've got the intersectional, you've got an intersectional thing going on here, right? So you've got conservative, you've got Christian, like true Christian, and you've got black, right? And you're just opposing a society where the culture, all of the messaging, when you really just sort of look through the veil, it's hostile towards these things. It's hostile towards family. It's hostile towards traditional masculinity. It's hostile towards traditional femininity. It's hostile towards babies. It's hostile towards motherhood. And once you see that, you realize just how inverted it all is. And I think so many people fall into that because we live in a world, we live in a society, we're all influenced in various ways. And without a deeply strong faith and an ability to sort of have courage and deal with blowback, most people will just acquiesce. And you see it happen all the time.
But it's not even just blowback, or the blowback is more intense than just being rebuked. It's being limited in terms of corporate America. You're not fit for leadership. You try to live out your Christian values in corporate America. If you're not willing to celebrate LGBTQ Pride Month, if you're not willing to call people by specific pronouns that they decide that day, if you're not in support of BLM or at least not critical of it, you can't be a leader in corporate America. And so for someone like me, and because I'm not even, as I think through the conversation, you're right in terms of who's got numbers.
Yeah.
But in terms of who's got influence over what's being tolerated and what's being promoted in America and what values you need to adopt to elevate in America, it's like for someone my age, 57, and I would think you're 25 years younger than me or 20 years younger than me, I can't believe I'm living in a time where all the values that I was taught as a kid are have just been thrown out the window, and they'll actually harm you in the world rather than help you. I these values, even though I wasn't living them out fully, I wasn't, but they're what made me great as a sports writer. The masculinity and ethics and knowing right and wrong and standing on truth and being outspoken and speaking truth to power. That's what made me a decorated, celebrated, valuable journalist. And now I'm living in a place where it's like, hey, throw that away.
Yeah.
Support the vaccine. Go on TV and tell people that, hey, you should take these vaccines and boosters. I don't care how young you are. Go out and pretend like the police are killing black men randomly when I'm like, well, hold on, man. I'm from the hood. I got family still in the hood. We're not running around afraid of the police. Just cut it out. It's depending on your neighborhood. It's the Vice Lords and the Gangster Disciples, or it's the Crips and the Bloods. It's not the police. And yes, do we have some occasional problems with police? No question. But on a day-to-day basis, like my father's whole worldview was black. He lived in the black community. He loved black people, his bars, blah, blah, blah. But he carried a .38 pistol, not to keep the police up off of him. there were bars on his house, an alarm on his house, not to keep the police out. Everybody's got to pretend like it's the police or it's some random white man. And that's not who we're thinking about. The white man's not our God.
Yeah.
But everybody has to go on TV and pretend like he is. I can't believe I'm living in this world.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, if you look at any society, any culture, any nation, any people, there are grand narratives. Doesn't matter where you are in the world, there are grand narratives that everybody is supposed to believe in and abide by. And depending on what country you're in, depending on what time in history you're in, those grand narratives shift and change and morph. There was a time where in both the USA and in the UK, one of the grand narratives was Christianity. Right? There would have been a time where 90%, maybe 95% plus percent of the population of both countries would have been, I'm a Christian, to the point where you don't even need to have certain conversations and you don't even need to explain certain things. And you can just speak in a certain language and everyone knows what you're in because everyone has bought into the same narrative. In a country like the USA, I would believe some, you know, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. These are grand narratives where we all agree, we all accept that the ideas laid out in these documents, this is what it means to be American. This is what we abide by, right? You didn't have people questioning, saying, oh, the Constitution is dangerous, or maybe we need to tear it right now. I mean, you could call it ideological diversity. Due to the ideological diversity now, it's like the grand narratives are being, the old ones anyway, are being torn apart. Even ideas around family, right? Everyone used to know, like, one man, one woman, get married, have children, this is the best structure. We all know this. No one is debating it. You can't even debate it, right? Everyone knows. And then that falls apart. You have the sexual revolution. These narratives fall apart. And you get new narratives now. You get new narratives. Right? It used to be like, I would imagine 100 years ago in this country, basically everyone was pro-life. Everyone would have been pro-life now. And now, ooh, it's shifted. Now, post-sexual revolution, you give it a few decades, you use the media, you use all these different channels, the politicians start speaking differently, and now we have new grand narratives. I'll give you, it's interesting, because even in my relatively short lifetime, you've seen some of these things change. So if you were to just go back, say, 25 years ago, vast majority of the population of both the USA and the UK would not support same-sex marriage. They wouldn't even call it a marriage. They'd say, no, a marriage is between a man and a woman. Like, we all agree on this grand narrative. For thousands of years, we all agree. Within the last 15 years, that has shifted to the point where, even in conservative circles, so-called conservative circles, if you were to say, no, I believe a marriage is between a man and a man can't get married, a woman, you are now, ooh, that's a bit... It's like, wait, hang on. Barack Obama used to say that. Hillary Clinton used to, like, people on the left side of the aisle used to be saying this not so long ago, but nope, the narrative has now shifted. So if you're still in that old position, it's like you're now the bad guy. If you're there and you're saying, oh, hey, actually, I'm pro-life. You know what? I think it's wrong to kill an unborn child. Like, that should not be a controversial statement. Whether or not someone agrees with it, regardless of what position someone takes on that, it shouldn't be, oh my gosh, I can't believe, but there are many circles where it's like you're cast out if you go out and you publicly say that. If you are you're a celebrity or you're a politician in certain areas, or I don't know, you're in Hollywood, you're an athlete or something, you come out and you strongly take that stance. If you take the opposite stance, totally fine, yay, applause, amazing, he supports a woman's right to choose, yes, he's a champion for women, but the other one is going to get you the stick. And I just think that's how societies go. That's how things shift. So you can be like yourself where you mostly stay still, right? You're right? Like, you just stand there. Yeah, this is how you're seeing a lot of people who formerly would have considered themselves liberals or even progressives, and they're now more aligned with people on the right and conservatives. Their values haven't even changed. In many cases, they could have some strong disagreements, say, with a Christian conservative, but they're now closer to that person than they are to the super left, woke, oh, maybe communism is good, there's infinite genders, we should judge people based on their skin color, everything is white supremacy, we need to dismantle. They're like, oh no, like I'm actually more aligned with these guys over here. So I think we've just seen that leftward shift socially, culturally, politically, and I think it gets accelerated by things like social media. And here we are.
Where I go with it, Zuby, though, is we all were 100 years ago, certainly 200 years, pro-life.
Yeah.
Christianity is pro-life. This new grand narrative that you're talking about is pro-death.
Mm-hmm.
And it is good versus evil in my view. And what they can't show me is anywhere where their mentality, their worldview has been successful. Show me the successful society, culture, neighborhood, community, whatever, that's been built around. A marriage is anything. Whatever you decide, if it's two men, two women, show me somewhere in history where that has led to success,
harmony, peace, well-developed young people, happy young people. It doesn't exist. I can show you in history where the nuclear family structure has been the foundation, the bedrock of developing smart, happy, well-rounded young people built to take the society forward. And we have even show me where their rejection of Christianity creates more freedom. It doesn't. It creates more censorship, more abuse of power. Because again, take someone like Bill Maher, who's a devout atheist and whose brand is built on atheism or whatever. He's starting to realize, like, hey man, in a Christian culture, I had more free speech. I had more free speech in a Christian culture. He's starting to realize the consequences of the rejection of a Christian culture because he did have more free speech because Christians believe in forgiveness. Christians are standing on such firm foundation. I don't care what joke Bill Maher makes about me. I'm standing on truth. Mm-hmm. I'll even laugh. Oh, he made a movie mocking Christianity. I'm standing on a firm truth, and so I'm not afraid of what Bill Maher or any of these people have to say. Now that we've moved into the secular culture, it's like, well, Jason Whitlock can't say that. He can't say marriage is between a man and a woman. That makes me feel unsafe or a victim or whatever. It's because their foundation's not firm. They're not standing on anything. They just made it up last week, and they know the truth of the consequences of the lifestyle they've chosen, and so we've moved off into an insanity where two men are hopping in a hospital bed, pretending like they just delivered a baby, and feel like they can raise a baby better than a mother. This isn't, and they love to say trust the science, as if there is no science or wisdom to what God designed. And just, I look at men that, you know, from Pete Buttigieg and all these others do this cosplay, and it's like, just go look at the physical structure of a man in terms of the development of a baby is small. Mm-hmm. Women have much smaller features, hands, whatever, so they can actually handle a baby. Shaquille O'Neal trying to handle a baby, it's just not built. And that's why he needed his wife, Shani or whatever. And again, the physical, the smaller physical stature of women is by design. That's a perfectly designed human being to help a newborn baby. And we're, oh, well, we don't need that. Screw the maker doesn't know what he's doing. And so it's just leading to our rejection of God's wisdom and rejection of true science is leading to our destruction, and we look at young people, they're committing suicide at astronomical rates, they're disrespectful at astronomical rates, and
depressed,
everybody
anxious.
Yeah, the whole deal. And everybody, and again, you sit there and say, hey, 100 years ago, no one was pro-abortion, is because everybody realized what a blessing a child was.
Yeah.
100 years ago, oh my God, I got someone else to help me in this house. And, you know, technology has fooled us into believing we don't need human beings, and we actually do. It's a scary time.
Man, I'm with you on all this. I mean, to me, it's also, well, I think maybe two things. Number one is that it's not new. If you just go back, read the Old Testament.
It's nothing new, yeah.
The Israelites going through that cycle of disobedience and rebellion and idol worship, punished. Exiled, you come back, you play it straight for a while, nope, now time to rebel again, go against God's word, break all the commands. It just repeats over and over and over for hundreds and hundreds of pages. So this is the state of humanity. This is the state of society, so there's that. And then the second part is that all the things that we're seeing is if you fully deny that there's a God and there's a creator, then a lot of what we're seeing, it's like, well, obviously that's the outcome because the thing at the top either becomes the state or it becomes self or it becomes something else external. It could be money. It could be sex. It could be, you know, there's got to be something at the top of the hierarchy. It could be science itself. Trust the science. Follow the science. This person or institution is the science, right? You're making science a deity when it's supposed to be a process through which, you know, the scientific method, a process through which we learn things, and I would say to explore the God's creation. And so you ultimately end up with just consent-based morality, where the only thing that matters is, was it between consensual adults? And that becomes the only basis for judging anything. And that is increasingly where we're going in the West. So all these examples you bring up, someone who is in a totally secular and progressive mindset, they'll be like, well, who are you to judge? If it was between consenting adults, then what's the problem? They'll still recognize that physically harming someone is wrong, or that stealing something from someone is wrong. But outside of a few sort of basic principles like that, where there's the harm foundation, it ultimately comes down to consent for them. So with all these ideas that they're pushing and promoting, they're the ones confused by someone like yourself or myself who might be like, hey, that's wrong, or that's not good, or that's not sinful, because they're like, well, how can it be wrong if it's between consenting adults? So as long as you want to do, if you want to go and, you know, shoot up heroin and live on the street, or you want to go and have, you know, 500 women and live in some, I don't know, weird polyamorous polycule, but are they all consenting? Okay, then, you know, who am I to judge? That's what it ends up being.
The fact or the belief that they have any limits is cosplay, though, as well. Like, well, we're still against killing people. Well, no, you're not.
Depends.
no, you're not.
That's why they push euthanasia. They're pushing that now.
Right, but go beyond abortion, go beyond euthanasia. Just look at their promotion and love of war. Mm-hmm. And so dropping bombs on innocent people anywhere in the globe, that's murder. And they're pro that. And so it's all a facade. They're not pro-life. They're pro-death. And there's just levels to, hey, how can we normalize more and more death so that they can really come out of the closet and say what they really, really think? And it's just like, we want less of all of you.
Oh, yeah.
A lot less.
Oh, people say that out loud.
Yes. There's 8 billion, and if we can somehow figure out a way to get it to 1 billion and maybe even 500 million, that would be best case scenario. And that's why, to me, they don't seem to have any fear of nuclear conflict and don't have any fear of just conflict in general. And so it's a death cult to me, and I get that there's nothing new, and I get that as a believer, the ending has been written and we know who wins, but I'm still terrified, horrified by, like, in my lifetime, look at all this change. And then I sit there and I go between, like, what a mistake and a mess I made of my life that I don't have kids, but I'm also somewhat relieved, like, well, at least I'm not leaving my kids to this world. We've so mismanaged this thing. We've been so reckless with this thing. Part of me is like, well, at least I ain't gotta.
Don't you think that comes from the enemy, though? That mentality? Because a lot of young people, a lot of people my age and younger, they're using that now as their reason not to have kids, because they're looking, they're so demoralized, and they're thinking, oh, I wouldn't want to bring a child into this world. But people brought kids into the world during World War II, World War I, the Black Death, the Depression, all the terrible things that have happened, far worse than whatever we're dealing with.
I say I'm of mixed minds.
Yeah.
My thoughts are more selfish.
Okay.
Because I wouldn't sleep at night thinking, like, I'm leaving my kids this. Mm. So that's a selfish, inappropriate mindset I'm acknowledging. The in reality, I know, like, we got to be pro-life, and we got to shoot more arrows. We got to disciple and raise up kids who can change this. And we got to remember, you know, Jesus and 12 disciples changed the world.
For sure.
And so, you know, it's not like we need a million. The guy did it with 12. Mm. And so some of you all, and, you know, shooting those arrows out, keep shooting them arrows out, because you may just shoot the one that saves the world and saves the planet and sends us a different direction. I, I feel so, because, you know, I was so disobedient, so worldly, and such a part of the problem that I just like, oh, man, I'm going to have to answer to God for all this dumb stuff I did. Mm. And so I'm scared.
What was the turning point for you?
Getting completely humbled. The last time I worked at ESPN, it just kind of took the scales off my eyes and helped me realize, because I just kept, well, why do these people hate me? Mm-hmm. And I'm just sitting there, what is it about me? It's, you know, I know I'm a critic and sometimes I criticize a lot, but it's got to be something deeper. And that's when I figured out, like, no, there were these Christian values instilled in me as a child through my grandmother and through the church I grew up in that they recognized as a threat, that I didn't fully understand it, that, you know, I was just being me and blah, blah, blah. But anybody that was really paying attention is like, man, this dude's a problem. He's got these Christian values. He sticks to the truth and he blows up. Like, you ever heard of the Gen of Six?
Yes.
The Gen of Six, one of the original racial hoaxes. I went down to Louisiana, did the report, and blew that whole narrative up, changed the whole conversation. And so this is probably in 2006, 2007, sometime around there. I'm just being a journalist and thinking no big deal. I think the people much wiser than me was like, man, this dude's a problem. And he's winning awards, and Oprah had him on to talk about certain things. It's like, oh, we got to do something about it. And so eventually in 2013, I go back to ESPN, and they got me. All the left and all that, like, orchestrated and all these lies and just totally smeared my reputation. And that's when I realized, like, oh, it's God, it's not me. Mm. And if I don't get right with God, I'm going to get destroyed. And so that's what made me say, oh, boy, let me start taking the necessary steps to get right with God and get on board with what he wants me to do rather than thinking about what I want to do. And so I just started creeping back that direction. And, you know, the scales came off my eyes, and now I could see what's really going on, that it's my values that are the problem. And, you know, I might as well live those values out rather than fight against them.
Yeah. What are you optimistic about?
Well, the ending, because, you know, we're going to win. But I'm optimistic because I do think the scales are coming off people's eyes. What Elon Musk has allowed to happen over Twitter makes me optimistic to see someone with that amount of wealth take the risk that he's taking. Mm. Is inspiring, and it makes me, hey, you know, this guy with all this money, and, you know, he could be doing a million other things than picking a fight with the ADL and the world or whatever, but he's chosen this fight, so you might as well get in it. So that makes me optimistic. The fact that Trump survived the assassination attempt, that makes me optimistic because, you know, I do think God was involved in, like, no, I'm not quite done with Trump. There's more work for him to do, so let's turn his head, and this bullet's not going to kill him. And I just see more and more young people like yourself and others that are going a different direction and are rejecting the programming and recognizing the programming and just aren't selling out for the money and the popularity and influence. So I feel like I'm seeing a turn. And it, you know, now things still may get worse. You know, Kamala may get elected. And you know, if that happens, it's just another signal like, yeah, things aren't bad enough. They got to get a little worse before you guys really get on board. That's what had to happen to me in my life. Things had to get really bad. And so, you know, I those things, so much truth is being exposed. You know, there's enough of us now cynical of corporate media and the lies that are being told. And we're smart enough. We can look over at the UK and see what's going on over there and say, holy cow, do we we want more of that over here? And so I think the scales are coming off other people's eyes, and so that makes me optimistic.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's really important for countries to learn from other countries. I'm always traveling, and I know for me individually, that's something that's, from a young age, has really helped my perspective and worldview in so many ways. And I think that now the world's never been more interconnected. People have never been so interconnected. It's never been so easy to communicate across borders in real time and just see what's going on in different places, for better or for worse, and just to learn. I think in the past, countries used to be very isolated, and it was like, we don't really know what's going on elsewhere, right? You're just in India, and you're never going outside those boundaries, and you're not even aware that certain other countries even exist. Whereas now, you can just look around the map and see, okay, that's working well, that's not working well. You don't need to theorize so much. You can see what's working and what's not. Even in the US, even within this country, you're running 50 different experiments right now. So you can see policy-wise, okay, this place decided to, where was it recently? Was it Portland where they decided to, a couple years ago, to legalize all drugs? I think it was in Portland, Oregon.
I think so.
2021, 2022, and the overdose rate tripled. And so now they're rolling that one back, right? So anyone else who's thinking of, oh, maybe that's a good idea, it's like, all right, maybe you can put that one to bed now because you just saw that experiment run and it tripled the amount of people who were dying. So maybe that's a bad idea. Maybe it sounds good in your brain as a super progressive or a super libertarian.
Look good on the wire.
Yeah.
Amsterdam. It was awesome.
Yeah. So you can just see it. So it's kind of like, all right, like, let's just see what places are doing and let's see what's working and what isn't. I think that would be the wise thing to do.
Are you optimistic?
I'm extremely optimistic.
Because?
I'll tell you what. I'm optimistic. I'm extremely optimistic for some people, especially when I look at the younger generations. When I look at, like, Gen Z, people of the right mindset have more opportunities than any previous generation by miles. I've met so many people who are 18, 19, 20, 21, and I'm like, dude, like, when I was 21, I couldn't even be doing what you're doing right now because the technology to enable it did not exist. So if you have a certain worldview and you're able to see the opportunity that is granted, take something really simple. Take smartphones and social media. These things can bury people. You can destroy someone with a smartphone and social media. You can also have a 20-year-old who creates an empire and becomes a multimillionaire in his 20s. And I know people like this. I know many people in their 20s who are already multimillionaires because of the power of social media and smartphones. So do you choose to be a producer and to use these technologies and tools and the connections and people you can reach as a force for good? Or are you going to do what typical people do and just spend 8 hours getting brainwashed by TikTok and consuming nonsense and killing your attention span and buying into stupid ideologies and wasting all your time and all your money? Same tool, you've got both options. When I was 20, when you were 20, like those opportunities didn't even exist. The ability to connect with people. I'm connected to Elon Musk. I had Elon Musk on my podcast. That would not have been possible 20 years ago for me. How could I even reach him? How did you get him? I DM'd him. In fact, he DM'd me first, right? If I look at the people I'm connected to, a couple days ago, like, in the past week, if I look at the people I've met and connected to, Tucker Carlson, in the last 10 days, I've connected with Tucker Carlson, Vivek Ramaswamy, Russell Brand, Tulsi Gabbard, Glenn Beck, Jeremy Boring, Ben Shapiro, Brett Cooper, Matt Walsh, Jordan Peterson. I could go on. This is in the last 10 days. We wouldn't even have known each other 20 years ago. I'm not even from this country. So, and I've done all this, I'm not tooting my own horn, but this is just through using these technologies well and using my voice well and communicating. No investment, no outside this, no outside that. Look at the studio. Look at the things like we're able to create and the opportunities. The fact that thousands of people are going to hear this conversation. We couldn't do this before. Maybe if you got hired by a big radio station, you could do it. But you couldn't just be like, I'm a random guy and I'm just going to start a podcast. Now you've got people who just start a YouTube channel in their bedroom And within a couple of years, they've got hundreds of thousands or sometimes millions of followers and subscribers, and they're monetizing it, and they're getting out their message, and they're taking on... Who are the most listened to men in this entire country?
Tucker and Joe Rogan.
Like, and they're both independent.
I do tend to look at that and think, yeah, that's good. But I'm old enough to remember, Zuby, when the biggest voices in anyone's life were called mama, daddy, auntie, uncle, grandmama, granddaddy, meemaw, peepaw, whatever. Mm-hmm. And that we've now created through technology where because we've had one record player and two TVs in the apartment me, my brother, and mother share. And so my mother's voice was the loudest voice in the house. And I didn't mean that because she was screaming and yelling. She was the adult in the house. And what, you know, let's say it was a 1,400 square foot apartment we lived in. She could hear everything.
Yes.
And she had a comment about everything. Hey, Jason, I'd be in another room, but she could hear what I'm doing and blah, blah, blah. And if we wanted to play music, there was only one record player, so we all had to hear it. But now, through technology, it's like a kid can put some headphones in or earplugs in, and Snoop Dogg has them for the next hour.
Oh, for sure. That's been true my whole life.
Yes. Yeah. And so that's where it's like, is there too much? Has the primary... disciples of young people, the primary people that should be influencing young people are actually the people that love them the most and have the most invested 100%. In them. And we've now given them, cause, you know, hey, I like Joe Rogan, but he's a pothead. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, and he's presenting to the world like, hey, you know, smoking weed and having conversations.
This is where, you know, that's always been up to the parents. I mean, firstly, I think, again, it's important to remember around the world, the vast majority of children are growing up in two-parent households. The USA is one of the worst in the entire world in this regard, and I'd say it's one of the biggest problems in this country that you have such a high rate of single-parent families, mainly single mothers. That's a massive problem that a lot of people don't want to acknowledge. But even in this country, despite that, most kids in this country are growing up in two-parent households. It's just trending in the wrong direction. So,
two-parent working, a lot of these kids are. And so the more time you work, the less...
Less time with the kids.
With the kids. And so it's a different version of what two parents used to be about. And that's, we're so materialistic in terms of... Me and my dad lived in a 400 square foot apartment, and it wasn't ideal, but I was not miserable.
Yeah.
I was not depressed. I wasn't any. I had a great childhood.
Good.
And so we've now. Well, my kid can't be happy unless he has a 500 square foot bedroom.
it's up to, you know, it's up to parents, and it's up to, you know, the older generations. Really, I mean, every younger generation, the groundwork is laid by the older generations. So I always think when people are quick to criticize young people in the direction they're going, you know, the mirror sort of points back at them, and it's like, well, somebody raised them. Like they didn't come up with all these ideas by themselves. If you're raising a kid in this day and age, and you're just gonna stick them in front of a tablet and let them watch YouTube and TikTok for 8 hours a day, then, yeah, maybe by the time they're 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, you're not going to be the biggest influence on their life. But I'm not a parent yet, so I don't want to be too harsh. But it's like you let that happen. You chose that. So I think people need to recognize that. And it's a new challenge because the stuff didn't used to exist. So there we are. Jason, where can people find and follow you online?
Well, you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/Jason Whitlock. You can find me on Twitter at Whitlock Jason. That's WHITJSON. Instagram, The Real Jason Whitlock, or maybe it's Real Jason Whitlock. No the at the end of that. Punch me into Google. You can find me.
Awesome. Jason, always a pleasure. Great to chat with you.
Thank you so much.
Attention, everyone! Wayfair's Black Friday preview sale is here early. Right now, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on furniture, bedding, cookware, holiday decor, and tons more. Now's the time to score big on finds to feast, get festive, and get comfortable all season long. Plus, enjoy fast and easy shipping. And right now, until October 31st, get 10% back when you join our new rewards program. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com. Terms apply.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.